Dealt.
Let's bring on Darren Woodson right now, the former All-Pro safety and the man who hosts the Darren Woodson Show. It's a podcast right now that you can find on Apple, and he joins the show right now. We got a lot to talk about now, Darren, so lock in. Won't be as long as a podcast because radio doesn't have those same – radio has different constraints, but we welcome you to the show. How are you doing today?
What's going on?
Not much. So, you know, so your guy, Russ Spielman, also represents me, and he told me about what you were doing, and I'm going to go dig in on some of the podcasts. I was out of town this week, but you've got some really interesting topics that you can speak specifically to. Like, one of them is what's it like to negotiate against Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys. And I think, you know, that's one of them. You got what's it like when you were cut? What's it like? And you've had Matt Forte on, and you have some interesting guests on who can speak to things that the fans may have always wondered about, and now they get actual insight into it.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy, too, that, you know, the podcast is myself, a guy named Tyler Klutz that played in the league in the NFL for 7 years, bounced around, played with the Cowboys to finish his career for the last 2 years. And then we have a young man named Ben Gibbs, who was a tremendous athlete at Abilene Christian. And didn't make it to the next level. It tore his knee up and didn't make it. So we all come from different perspectives. You know, my perspective was I got drafted early, played 13 years, was never on the cutting board, never was never cut, never thought I was going to get cut. My career ended due to injury. Tyler Klutz played and was cut at least 7 or 8 times. So we're coming from different experiences as it pertains to sports. But the show is centered around interesting stories. We don't want to just focus primarily on sports. We're tackling every vertical, whether it's CEO, a doctor, an attorney. It doesn't matter who it is or what profession it is. We just want the interesting stories. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had Rich Froning on, the CrossFit champ, and he talked about, you know, his childhood and what made him, you know, such a competitive guy, and you know, going and getting into these dark places where the body stopped, and he, you know, figured out a way to overcome the mind, and you know, those are the stories that people want to hear. And you know, peeling back the onion is part of what makes this show, or the Darren Woodson Show, special.
Darren Woodson with us here on ESPN 97.5. Well, give us a little taste of it. What was it like negotiating with Jerry Jones and getting money out of him?
Tough. Really tough. You know, there's a reason why he's the best businessman in as far as the NFL is concerned. He's a great owner, but he's hard. He's a tough negotiator when it comes contract talks. And there's a reason why, because he plays the good cop, and his son Steven plays the bad cop. And it's hard in the sense of if you're sensitive and you can't handle tough talk, then it's going to be hard to deal with the Jones' family. You have to take the sensitivity out of the situation and look at it as a business situation and have your agent be the one who's up in front. You stay back, Dak Prescott, stay back, just play the game. Just play football and don't worry about the negotiation, because once you get involved and you're sensitive about it, then that's when it really affects you. But you know, they do a good job of playing good cop, bad cop. And again, you know, Jerry being the best owner ever in sports is going to let you know the reason why he's a great businessman.
How involved now is Steven Jones? Because it feels like he's really involved. And I tell you, the turning point for me when I realized somebody like Steven must have more sway, and I think I heard this, was in the 2014 draft where everyone thought, oh, Manziel is going to be this is a Jerry Jones splash pick. And then they went Zach Martin, the smart, sensible pick on the offensive line. And I thought, hold on a second. This isn't the Jerry Jones pick. I thought for sure Jerry was going Manziel.
Yeah. Listen, I think Steven has always had some sway. I can remember in 95 when the Cowboys were interested in Deion Sanders. And, of course, the salary cap pretty new. And Steven's job was to manage the salary cap. And Jerry was pushing to sign Deion and offer him a ton of money. And Steven and Jerry got into a physical fight and the fact that Steven said, look, you're going to kill this team as far as the salary cap is concerned. And they got into it. And that's when I remember saying, okay, he's got more pull, and he's willing to stand up to his father. And if that's the case, you know that there's going to be a change at some point where Steven's going to have a lot more pull. And he does. And it's not just Steven. It's Will McClay who's the acting, doesn't have the title. But Will McClay is the acting GM and head of the scouting department. And he and Steven are close. They talk every single day. And as it pertains to personnel, you know, that's where the decisions are basically made. And then Jerry makes the final rubber stamp decision. But those two, Will McClay and Steven Jones, are highly involved in the decision-making with the Cowboys.
Darren Woodson and the Cowboys Ring of Honor here with us on ESPN 97.5. You mentioned Dak stay out of the negotiations. Michael Irvin has been very outspoken about pay that man his money. What do you think?
I agree. And I think that, you know, listen, it's obvious that they're going to pay Dak Prescott at some point. I mean, this guy has been tremendous in the locker room. Since the day he stepped in and got drafted by the Mississippi State, he came in, Tony Romo gets hurt, and every offensive lineman, and that's the key. Once you know the offensive linemen are going to rally behind you as a rookie, that means you have the locker room and you have their respect. And as a rookie, they instantly said he was the leader. And I can tell you this. I'm sitting, my office is headquartered at the Cowboys headquarters here in Frisco, Texas. And my real estate office overlooks the practice field. And every single day over the last 2.5 years, I can look out my window, and this year being a little different with COVID because they haven't been able to come in and train. But over the time, you can see Dak Prescott walk outside, and he's throwing balls to the fourth, fifth string wide receiver, some of the special teams guys he's working with. He's the first one out on the field, and he's a guy that's going to go 4 or 5 hours, put that kind of work into it. And it reminds me a lot of what Michael Irvin brought to the table when he was a player. And that's the reason why you see the mutual respect, because you see a kid that's putting in tremendous work. And when you have a guy like Dak Prescott or Zeke Elliott, your superstars are putting in the work. It only trickles downhill, similar to what Tom Brady, I'm not comparing the two, but I'm comparing the work ethic like Tom Brady has and the respect that he demands within the locker room because of how much work he puts in.
You know, one of the things I think is interesting in talking to an agent who said, look, if you were an agent for a quarterback, you know, if you're a quarterback agent, because a lot of agents specialize, he said, they're loving the NFL right now. He said, for those of us who have kind of middle class players, he said, this is a really tough time to see the quarterback. He said, you know, the quarterback salaries, because it's not like it's resetting the entire market. It's resetting that position. And that means it's going to come out of the pockets of other players. And I really wonder if we're going to see that in the NFL, where there becomes maybe some blowback behind the scenes through the players' union, where they're talking about the fact that, hey, it's getting a lot harder for those of us who have 7 years in the league and we play a position like middle linebacker. I don't know, because in basketball it didn't happen. In basketball, the middle class just kind of disappeared. And in baseball, the same thing. It looks like maybe we'll see the same thing happen in football. I don't know.
Yeah, listen, hey, I think the one thing you will understand about the locker room is that they are capitalists, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them, I can tell you this, yeah, the agents may be upset and some of the players might be upset and jealous by the fact that the quarterbacks are making their money. But when it comes time for them, their contract to come up, you better believe it's about them. And we become individuals as far as getting your deal done. If I'm a player or within the Players Association, we can't worry about that, man. That's like one of the least things that we can worry about as far as a quarterback and separating yourself to say, well, you know, the quarterback's going to make all this money and now it's going to affect me. Hey, get your damn job done. You figure it out. You become the highest paid middle linebacker. You work your butt off to get there. And I know it's not fair. Life is not fair. And in business, hell, I own two companies. Business is not fair. It's just a part of it. That's why That's why we live in this capitalist society. That's why we go out and do what we can do to improve our situations. So, but we can't worry about what the quarterbacks are doing. And I'll be damned about the agents raising Cain about that, man. That pissed me off.
Darren Woods with us here on ESPN 97.5. Darren, we saw Marvin Wilson from Florida State. We see the Iowa players, the Utah players now stepping up. We've never seen players empowered like this before and having a voice like they have. How is this going to go in college and pro football?
Look, I don't know, honestly, guys. And you're talking about the demonstration? I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, or just saying, hey, I'm calling this coach out. Back in 2013, he said this. Or, you know what, I felt uncomfortable in the weight room with the strength coach from Iowa. Or whatever it is, Marvin Wilson said, you didn't say that, coach. You're lying. You never talked to every individual player at Florida State. And guys are actually stepping up and calling out coaches now.
Yeah, and that's unheard of. And with social media, you know, these players, current and former players, and it's normally the former players who talk about their experiences after the fact. And that's not a shot at them, but it's, you know, they have a platform, and because of that, which is unheard of. I remember playing in my days from 92 to 2004, 2005. We didn't have a voice. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Instagram. Or platform. Now it's just a part of it, and you're going to hear these type of things spur over the next, and especially when it's such a hot topic situation right now, and they want to relive, you know, some of the things that have happened in the past, or a coach may have said something, and then you have someone that retracts that. It's going to happen. It's a part of it, and it makes that job. I can honestly tell you this: it makes the coaching job that much harder, the head coaching job, assistant coaching job, because now what you have to do is not only are you the coach, especially in college, not only are you the coach, but you have to look over all these kids within college, 18-year-olds to 22-year-old kids, and oversee them and then try to be at your best on and off the field and make them all comfortable. And that's going to be a trying job for any coach. And I think it speaks volumes to those coaches, those people that want to be coaches coming up, because there's a lot of flack that's going to be coming their way because of the voice and the platform for these young players.
Darren Woodson joins us right now. We're talking a little bit about the issues in the NFL, but also his podcast. And if you want to find it, Darren Woodson Show, you can find it on iTunes. I would imagine you're going to be on a lot of different, whatever platform that people are seeking out, you know, podcasts. I would imagine you're there right now.
Yes. Yeah. We're on all social media platforms, YouTube, iTunes.
Oh, you're doing a YouTube as well?
Yes. Yeah. We're doing some YouTube. We're trying to look, we're young in this.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you this, we're three dudes and we're idiots. We are, man, and that's the show. I mean, it's just we sit around and we call a round table, and we talk about hot topics.
Yeah,
whatever it is.
That's what people like hearing.
Yeah, but that's the feeling we want to have. You're outside in your back patio, you and your buddies are having a beer. That's what we have, and we want people to tune in and give us advice on some topics that they want to talk about. I mean, we had a topic the other day about best cereals, top four cereals. And argue for 30 minutes about top five. You know, it's just, well, some things are just dumb things.
Which podcast is that? Because that's something that I would not only listen to, but I would be yelling at the radio.
Right.
Like, that's a real serious thing for me. Okay. Don't spoil it, but which one did you have first?
I had Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
It's legit.
But we only have four options, Val. We only have four options because this would have got really hairy.
Oh, okay.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Fruit Loops. What was the other one? We had two other ones.
Mini Wheats.
That Captain Crunch.
Yep.
And what's the little small guy with the mushrooms and the...
Oh, Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms. We had Lucky Charms.
Lucky Those Charms is making some raggedy-ass They're making some raggedy ass cereal now that's like it's basically Fruity Pebbles as Lucky Charms. What are y'all doing?
No, well, can't do that.
You can't do that.
If Cinnamon Toast Crunch is yours, have you ever done shots of rum chata?
No, you know what? We talked about it on I've never, my two buddies have, Tyler and Ben, and they said it tastes exactly like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
It's rum chata. When you got your next shot that you say, I want a rum chata, it is Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
So it's basically probably horchata.
It tastes exactly.
So it's horchata and rum.
I guess. That, I don't know.
Yeah, horchata is a non-alcoholic version. It's like,
okay.
Yeah, and yeah, John's trying to get you to drink during a pandemic. I mean, who's not drinking during a pandemic?
Well, he'd be alone if he wasn't, okay? He and Dell, our producer.
I want to ask you about this. So Aaron Taylor is a good friend of mine, and AT and I talked about his life after football and the massive issues he had with depression and alcoholism and drugs and loss of identity. And Marcus Coleman is a friend of the show. You might know Marcus from his days. And we saw it happen right here first. Marcus just started coming into the show. We had him in as a football guest, and then he was just hanging out here all the time. He just said he was bored to death. And I've had these conversations with former players, and I didn't realize it was this big a deal for especially football players, I think, where your whole identity can be gone by age 32, your playing days are over. Did you suffer from any of that, or do you know other players who really suffered with not being a football player anymore?
Yeah, we talk about that topic on our show as well, and it's hard. The transition is extremely hard because think about this. You've been doing this. In my case, I've been playing football since I was 7 years old. Never missed a season, just that's what I did. Played football, basketball. You know, as a kid, you play all these sports, but football was predominantly my sport of choice. So I go from 7 years old up to 36 years old of playing football. And all my life, it's been a part of me. And I loved the sport more than anything. And it's not just the individual part of it. It's the locker room feel. And you can ask anyone. They'll tell you, not about the games, because you forget the games. Even the biggest moments, you forget. But you don't forget the camaraderie. You don't forget your friends in the locker room, the trash talking, going across ethnic lines. Like, you know, there's some things that we say in the locker room that we are family. It's just a part of it. And you spend more of your time in the locker room with your buddies, your teammates, than your own family for 6 months. So you have to understand it's built in you, and you're told for so long, you're so structured in high school. This is what time you have to work out. Here's practice. In college, it's even more so structured. You go to school, you watch film, you work out, you do all, you run together, you go to practice, you walk back in, you eat together. And then you get in the NFL, and it's your job. It's what you do. And it becomes a part of you. It's your identity and how people recognize you outside of the sport. And that is the hardest transition, because when it's over and they cut you or you get hurt and you can't play anymore, you're no longer a part of it. You're done. And your voice is not heard within the locker room. And I can tell you this, the NFL is not setting up programs to say, okay, hey, here's life after football. It's really plain and simple. You better have saved up enough money. You better have figured out, you know, that there is more than just football. While you're playing football, more than just football, have something outside of that to transition yourself with. And I went through it, guys. I didn't go through it as much as a lot of my teammates and friends that I played with, because I went from the NFL, and a day later, 2 days later after I retired, I was at ESPN. Kept me around the sport.
Right.
And I did that for 14 years. And then I transitioned. I had own companies after that. But I've had so many friends, Tyler Klutz being one. The transition is almost impossible because he's been playing so long. And when his time came up, the Cowboys made the decision that they weren't bringing him back. And then they just left him out there. Now he had to figure out, what do I do next? And what do I do next can be depressing.
Absolutely. Darren Woodson, the Darren Woodson Show podcast with three, what'd you call yourselves?
Three idiots.
Three
is what
idiots.
He said.
Three idiots.
Yeah. Three idiots.
Three idiots.
We call ourselves the three best friends. That's what we have so much three best friends. Well, that's what we've been calling ourselves. But it's, man, I'm telling you, best time. Tune in.
All right. We will. We appreciate it. Darren, thanks for spending time with us. We really appreciate it. Best of luck with your businesses and the show and everything else.
Thanks again, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Appreciate it. Darren Woodson right here on ESPN 97.5. I got to talk about